Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 59. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Brett Arnold of The New Flesh.
I'm joined here with Brett Arnold, my colleague at Business Insider, who co-hosts the hot new horror movie podcast on the streets, The New Flesh, which is available on iTunes. Check it out. It's The New Flesh. He co-hosts that with my other Business Insider colleague, who's my desk mate, Joe Avella. Brett, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, we're here to talk about Spectre, the new James Bond installment, the 24th Bond installment. We both had the opportunity to see screenings ahead of the initial release. Unless, I don't know, were you in England last week and caught it in a cinema over there?
No, I caught it at the Regal Times Square on Monday night.
Okay. Yeah. And I saw it on Tuesday at like a Belvedere vodka screening.
Oh, weird. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So quickly, I'll be, you know, transparent here. I have not seen Quantum of Solace. I've seen Casino Royale and Skyfall, but have not seen Quantum of Solace. So this was my third out of the four Daniel Craig installments. So go ahead and tell me your initial impressions of Spectre.
The opening sequence of Spectre had me convinced I was going to love this movie. It's a very cool scene that immediately the opening shot or the opening, I don't know if it's the opening shot, but the opening scene features like him wearing this mask and it's like Baron Zemetti from Live and Let Die. So right away it's like, oh cool, they're harkening back to old school Bond. There's a helicopter sequence in the opening scene, which again goes back to For Your Eyes Only, Roger Moore. There's the same scene basically. So right away it's like a walk down memory lane, and I thought it was really cool. And that sequence has a lot of long takes. It's just a pretty much long take. Really, really impressive. And then after that opening scene, it just kind of flounders the rest of the movie.
The opening scene, I also thought it was incredible, and especially that long Brian De Palma-esque long take at the beginning that lasted for, you know, a good 5 minutes at least, where you're going through the streets, up the elevator, into hotel rooms, out windows, really amazing technical feat there. And then the action that ensued was amazing, and I was having a blast as well. But then this is the first time that something sort of went wrong for me. They set it up really well where James Bond goes up to a hotel with this beautiful woman, and he says, "I'll be back." And I was thinking, okay, after he accomplishes whatever he's going to accomplish, he's going to go back. He's going to, like, land the helicopter on the hotel, go back to the room, right? And then, boom, we're in the opening credits.
And then credits, yeah.
But they left me hanging because he just sort of flies the helicopter.
He flies away.
Back to London. I'm like, what about that poor woman in the hotel room?
Yeah, it was like, it made it seem superfluous because the whole opening sequence is him getting to this room and then he just leaves immediately. So it then to me, it was like, okay, so that was all show. Like, that sequence was really cool, but what was the point, kind of? Like, they just built it up for him to get there, but there was no reason for him to be there because he immediately leaves. So I was just like, okay, that's kind of a style over substance situation for me. And that kind of happens throughout, I thought. I don't want to spoil.
We can. This is spoiler heavy.
Spoiler heavy?
But before we get into the end of the plot, let's just set up a couple things. Sam Mendes is returning.
Yeah.
This is his second installment as a director.
Yeah.
Roger Deakins is absent on this one. He's replaced by Hoyt Van Hoytema.
Yeah.
Who's a very hot, you know, cinematographer right now.
It looked good.
In Interstellar.
Yeah.
Thomas Newman did the score. So those are some of the key players here. In terms of the plot here, it's sort of got this timely element of the Snowden surveillance. Is surveillance good? And
right.
And so sort of set up what this movie is about.
Yeah, well, they use the word drones a few times. So the plot is basically, it's a new era. There's some like super corporate-esque entity who wants to kind of get rid of the 007 program, the 00 program. He just says, you know, this is outdated. Why do we have humans doing this job when we could have a force of drones doing the exact same thing? So it's basically Bond and his MI6 or whatever, they're trying to stay relevant while this guy is trying to push them out. And of course, Bond kind of goes rogue, and Bond's not supposed to be on the doing whatever he's doing, and he's kind of on his own going rogue. Very like Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation sort of stuff. Bond going off the hinges.
I felt like this guy that represented sort of the future, the future of drones and surveillance, was like British Giovanni Ribisi.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
Who is this? Have you ever seen him in anything?
I couldn't. I couldn't place him. No.
I mean, it really. That I could not stop thinking Giovanni that the entire Ribisi. Time. Yeah. British Giovanni Ribisi. Yeah. Okay, so you've said that, you know, plot aside, you said when you in a tweet yesterday that the sort of the sum of all of the parts didn't measure up to the individual action sequences.
Yeah, the action sequence, every action sequence is good and is exciting and it's fun. But there's not enough. They're too few and far between, and there is just so much goddamn lingering in this movie. Like,
yeah. It's slow.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes,
yeah,
which is too long.
Yeah.
And honestly, you could cut an hour, I think, a full hour, and nothing would be lost.
Well, do you think that the slow parts, talk about what were the slow parts. Was it the stuff with Ralph Fiennes?
That was okay. It was mostly the stuff with him and Lea Seydoux, or mm-hmm, whatever her name mm-hmm. is. Basically, Bond is stuck with, who's that guy's name? Mr. White's daughter, is that his name? White?
Yeah.
The bad guy from Casino or Quantum?
Quantum of Solace.
The bad guy from Quantum. His daughter, basically, Bond made a deal with this guy before he died, saying, I'm going to go protect your daughter. So he goes to protect his daughter, and then she's kind of just his lackey the rest of the movie. And, of course, they form a relationship that is so forced also. I didn't buy the relationship for a fucking second. It just was a classic. Every Bond movie, you know what he's going to do. He's going to have sex with everybody on screen.
Yep.
So I get it. But it never tried too hard to sell it. It was just like, well, this is obligatory. Here's a woman. Bond's going to fall in love with her. And they take it to very extreme lengths by the end when he literally leaves. There's a big climactic, like, is he going to kill this guy moment? Is he going to be 00? And he's just like, nah, I'm going to go walk off into the sunset with this woman.
Who probably won't be around for the next movie.
Who definitely will not be around for the next movie.
Even though she said, I love you, and it's like...
It was a shitty ending, I think. That was bad.
So did you want him to pop a cap and...
I wanted him to...
Blowfield?
Sure, pop a cap, or just, you know, don't retire that way. Like, they basically... I mean, it was like a swan song sort of thing. Like, Daniel Craig saying, hey, I'm done. It's what it felt like to me.
Huh. He's being very ambiguous in real life about whether or not they're going to do it. You have to think that they will do at least
one. Well, they're going to do another one.
Okay.
I think. He keeps saying he's done. He literally has said, I'd rather slash my wrist than do another one. He said that. But he's a producer on these movies, you have to remember.
Yeah.
And these movies make money.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of money. It'll probably cross a billion, maybe. I don't remember if Skyfall did, but it got close.
Yeah.
So... from money standpoint alone, I feel like Craig is going to be like, yeah, I'll do another one. Mendez is out, though. Mendez really didn't want to do this one.
Wow.
And they gave him enough money to do it. And it feels like it feels like obligatory, as I said earlier. It just feels like Mendez was like, all right, you threw $200 million at me, I'll make this movie. And they're like, okay. And he did it.
Well, to his credit, I feel like he did a good service to the franchise and delivered two strong entries. I think that James Bond movies, you know, like this one, you mentioned how the slow exposition throughout the movie it definitely felt like it made it linger for too long.
Yeah.
But I think James Bond movies are sort of just what they are at their core are a series of set pieces that either involve action or sex.
Yeah.
And gadgetry.
Yeah. Right?
You know, so those moments in this, so you've got the opening scene in Mexico City, you've got the chase in wherever they were, Switzerland or Austria, where there's a plane chasing a bunch of Land Rovers, you've got the train sequence, the train chase,
you've got the escape
from Spectre's lair, and then finally you've got the escape from the demolished former MI6 building where they're on a speedboat chasing a helicopter. Then you have the gadgetry, which... basically, it was, and then the car chase with between Dave Bautista and Bond, which was really fun, beautifully shot.
Bautista, by the way, perfect Bond henchman.
Yeah,
he was born to play a Bond.
Absolutely.
Henchman. So that was fun.
Uh-huh.
And in typical Bond henchman fashion, he said one word, and it was shit.
Yeah.
I think like oh shit or something. Like he doesn't talk. He's just there being brooding.
I can't believe he died.
Yeah.
He's got to come back. I thought he was going to come back with like Jaws in his mouth.
Right. Yeah. You know? Maybe in the next one.
Yeah. You gotta think. But so that was my favorite scene out for two reasons. The scene
the keg is when he puts
yes,
the thing on his neck.
Yes. The whole but that whole sequence of on the train where Bond and Swan sit down to have this romantic dinner and they both look great, but then all of a sudden that's interrupted and we get this great fight scene, which was, you know, very little music used, a lot of great sound
just
effects.
Just shit getting, like, destroyed. They're getting, like, it's like comical, because they're just, like, breaking everything in sight.
Glasses, scotch glasses, every
wall,
champagne glasses.
Every wall they just
bars,
bust through.
Yeah. Doors. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. And then Swan got involved, too. She shoots Batista in the arm. Yeah. And then they get rid of Batista. And then she says, what do we do now? And they had this great cut to them just getting it on.
Yeah, you knew that it was going to happen.
That
as soon
was a
as
great moment.
Yeah, it's a very Bond moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, to me, and so that, you as long as you get a handful of those moments, this being one of them, I feel like that makes this movie a success, despite the fact that it is definitely slow. It should have been an hour and 50 minutes for sure.
Totally. It's too long. It's not a bad Bond movie, though. That's my whole thing. Like, if this were not a Bond movie, I'd be like, yeah, it was not very great.
Well, let's talk about this, because here's the issue we were sort of discussing, is that whether or not Christoph Waltz really delivered, or his character was really worthy of that actor's presence in this movie.
Yeah, he is great in it when he's on screen, but I'd say if you count the exact number of minutes he's on screen, it's probably under 20. He's barely in this movie. When he's on screen, his presence is great, it's commanding. They shoot him in a really, like, mysterious way. He's always shrouded in secrecy and shadows and stuff. And, like, that was great. I thought he definitely is great for a Bond villain, but they didn't do enough. And everyone knew it was Blofeld, even though in the marketing they've said, no, it's not, no way, we would never do that. Spoiler alert, it's him. Before you even find out it's him, I think the first tell is that the cat, when he has the cat just run up, it's like, oh, it is Blofeld. And then it's revealed. Yeah. So in that same regard, the Blofeld thing and all these other references to stuff, the Aston Martin at the beginning and at the end, it's, I don't know how to describe it other than like, there's even a scene where he literally is walking through like a museum of his past.
Right.
Towards the end. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what this movie is. That scene encompasses what the entire movie is trying to be. It's just like literally like a guided tour through Bond history.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it works in that regard, which I think also takes away from the fact that it's not a standalone great movie. It's just like, yeah, this is kind of a good summation of what Bond is and what a Bond movie could be, but it feels more like an attraction than like a.
Well, and that's feature. It's. I think that sometimes you want to incorporate aspects of the mythology that will create that nostalgic excitement.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how much of that we're going to see in the new Star Wars movie, because there's going to be a lot of stuff that's just there to make people to titillate people and say, "Ooh, look a Greedo reference."
Yeah.
You know, but
he did shoot first,
right? And yeah. So, but there's you got to find a balance there, and you know. I just feel like I'm disappointed overall with how Waltz was utilized in this movie. I felt that opening scene at the secret midnight meeting it was beautiful, but when we kind of go to the lair, it was almost like he was borderline Dr. Evil in terms of his exposition.
Exactly.
It's like, now you're tied up. But they didn't play it in that fully campy way.
Yeah.
The fact that they were trying to sort of play it straight, but he was doing Dr. Evil-esque exposition, strapping James Bond into a chair and drilling into his face.
Yeah.
It just made it feel sort of silly and not worthy of the gravitas possessed by Waltz.
Totally, man. The friend I saw it with was like, you can't do Blofeld in a post-Dr. Evil world, is what he said. He was like, it's too silly.
Absolutely, man.
He's wearing the, you know, the exact, like, the suit thing that is first from Bond, sure, but now it's more synonymous with Dr. Evil. So it just, for people, I would imagine most audiences, like millennials, they're going to watch this movie and think this movie is ripping off Austin Powers, because they probably don't understand that Austin Powers is ripping off James Bond.
Well, I thought it was a shame that they didn't make him bald. But if they did that, then people would have been
right
like,
away.
This is Dr. Evil.
Right.
But Dr. Evil was a direct, you know...
Blofeld.
It was a direct Blofeld reference. I really wanted that, because it was like basically just Sam Christoph Waltz with a scar on his face.
Yeah, they did the scar. Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. One more quick note that I again, another moment that really stood out to me was the scene with Monica Bellucci, the all-time oldest Bond girl,
yeah,
or Bond woman.
Yeah.
That scene was amazing. When he's got her up against the wall with the mirror and they're reflected and you basically got like four figures there, that was just beautifully, yeah, staged. You could feel the tension in the theater.
Yeah.
So sexy and intense. And that's just another like solid classic Bond moment from this movie for me.
Yeah, I thought that was a great scene.
So, okay, so to wrap it up, how do you rank this among the Daniel Craig James Bond movies?
I'm of the mind that Casino Royale is the best one. People like to say Skyfall, which is great, but I'm a Casino Royale's number one, Skyfall's number two, then this one, Spectre, and then Quantum. Quantum gets a bad rap. It's not terrible. You should watch it. It's fine. I think you'll actually like it. Because when you watch it, knowing its history, you're like, oh, this isn't that bad. It's fine. It's actually the shortest one, too.
It's under
2 hours.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna sort of treat Quantum of Solace like a Spectre prequel.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I'm sort of going into it.
That's how it, well, because, yeah, they do reference a lot of stuff from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, Brett, thanks so much, man. Tell everybody again about The New Flesh and what you guys are working on moving forward.
Sure, yeah. So I have this podcast called The New Flesh. It's a horror show with me and Joe Avella. We talk about new horror movies coming out. We talk about our favorite horror movies. We just spent the past 3 weeks talking about every single Halloween movie. We're going to have on some awesome filmmaker guests. The director of Creep and The Overnight is going to be on soon, and Starry Eyes, and a bunch of comedians are coming on in the future, so keep an eye on that.
And I heard that there might be a rumor that you were going to have a special guest to talk about Chappie.
Yeah, we're going to have a Graham Flanagan-hosted Chappie episode, because that's a horror movie for entirely different reasons.
We'll look forward to that. Thanks again, Brett. Congratulations on the success of the new podcast. It's really great. It's called The New Flesh. It's on iTunes. Go subscribe and listen to it. It's hilarious. So thanks again, man. This is Film Nerds Unlimited. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.